Welcome to the Let's Not Forget podcast. I'm Valerie Drown, Director of the Alzheimer's Disease Caregiver Support Initiative, or ADCSI. Like you, I am a caregiver, and like you, I know firsthand that caring for a loved one with dementia can be overwhelming. There's a lot to know when it comes to Alzheimer's disease, and each month, I'll be joined by people who have walked in your shoes or who have worked extensively in the Alzheimer's field to unpack it all in bite-sized, relatable chunks that might help you in your very difficult job. So for these next 30 minutes, I invite you to leave all of your stress behind as we offer tangible tips and real-world advice to help make the unmanageable manageable. Let's get personal. Our first episode of the Let's Not Forget podcast is titled Your New Norm, and our guest is Jim Comer, author of When Roles Reverse, A Guide to Parenting Your Parents. Jim is a seasoned multifaceted speaker, writer, and presentation skills coach with more than 25 years of experience working with Fortune 500 companies, nonprofits, and entrepreneurs. He has appeared on The Today Show, written jokes for Bob Hope and Joan Rivers, and authored op-eds that ran in the New York Times, Washington Post, and Los Angeles Times. But mid-career, after his father suffered a massive stroke and his mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, Jim had to leave his job and home in LA to become a caregiver for the next 14 years. At the age of 51, Jim found himself an overnight parent. Today, Jim is here to talk about caring for a loved one or parent who helped raise you. Jim Comer, thank you so much for coming and being with me today.
Good to be with you.
Jim, it has been since 2017, am I correct?
Every year, wow.
And you came and you spoke at a caregiver conference that we had, and the caregivers walked away feeling that it was the best program ever.
That's good to hear.
And the thing I walked away from with you is that you are probably one of the most heartfelt people I have ever known. And you empathized with me regarding my son who has autism. And you even sent him a book because you care that much.
I did. I remember. I hope he liked it.
Yes. He loved it. He loved to read at that point. And so I will never forget that about you. So, Jim, why don't you start off today telling us about your caregiving journey?
My caregiving journey started at 7 a.m. on February 20th, 1996. When I was awakened in L.A., where I was working at the time, by a phone call from my parents' next-door neighbor. In 34 years, he had never called me. When I heard her name, I knew something bad was going to happen in the next sentence, and it did. She told me my father was walking around the front yard in a daze, and that she thought he was having a stroke. And she was absolutely right. And I was in Dallas 12 hours later, and suddenly all responsibility for my father devolved on me because my mother had early Alzheimer's, and she didn't understand what was going on. I have no brothers and sisters, so suddenly I was the designated decision maker, the caregiver, and I was not ready. But I had to do it anyway. And so I just... I became an overnight caregiver, and I began making decisions right away that changed everything for my folks.
So when you say you weren't ready, when you're talking about caregiving and looking back, what could caregivers do to get ready, or is there nothing they can do to get ready?
I think you can do more than I've done. I had seen for the previous 5 or 6 years that my mother's dementia was increasing each year. And my father was not willing to talk about it. He would never even use the A word, Alzheimer's. He never, ever in his life used that word. when I would try to push him to have mother examined by a specialist, he totally rejected that. And I finally had to tell him that I was going to fly home and take her to a doctor myself if he didn't do it. He finally did it. But unfortunately, the doctor that they went to didn't use the A word either. So my father continued in his delusion. And so mother was down the road away and nobody had done anything. So, I could have been much more forceful. I probably should have flown back and taken her myself, but I didn't do those things. I was being the Southern good boy and not making waves. And so I would tell people that are listening to this, you need to make some waves. If you see someone in your family who is having dementia, you need to call attention to it. You need to make the people there actually go to the doctor, find out what's happening, and begin to get an action plan of what you can do to help that person and get the family ready to be dealing with dementia.
One of the things that I found helpful, Jim, and maybe you can give your ideas too, is when you go to a doctor, there are so many things that you've got to address. And sometimes when they walk in the room, you forget all of the things you want to mention. So I usually tell people to write a bulleted list of those questions that they want to address.
Well, I agree with that completely. Look at this right here. I wrote a list of things I would talk about today, not knowing what we would cover. So the same thing, have your list with you as I had my list ready for this interview, and then maybe bring another person with you so that if you forget something, that other person reminds you. Because in the emotion of the moment, you may forget something, and the person with you can help. So two is better than one. But just think ahead and be prepared about the things you want to talk about. And if the doctor doesn't cover them, say, excuse me, we need to talk about this. Don't let them steamroll you, because sometimes people are so overly respectful of doctors that they don't ask the questions they know they need to ask. Whether the doctor wants to talk about it or not, you need to talk about it.
And what about asking for a second opinion?
Perfectly fine to ask for a second opinion. What? People disagree tremendously on this subject. Find someone you're comfortable with. You get a gut feeling about a person, a doctor or someone at a nursing home or assisted living. You get a gut feeling about the person or the place. And I would say, go with that gut feeling. If you feel like they're not caring, I would go someplace else. I remember that when my folks were in Dallas, but we had no family in Dallas. They'd been there 34 years. I needed to get them down to Austin where all of our relatives were living. So I flew to Austin in a rainstorm. My cousin met me at the airport. We went to four rehab centers in one afternoon because they told me I had to get my dad into stroke rehab. I'd never been to a rehab center. I didn't know what I was looking for. I went to one after the other. They all looked the same. And I picked St. David's because a nurse smiled at me. And in that moment, I hoped that smile represented the care she would get at St. David's. And that's why I picked. Now, that's just a gut feel. But they did treat my father well.
But isn't it amazing how a smile, it can determine our decision when we're in a time when we don't know what we're doing.
That smile made a tremendous difference to me. And the same thing is true if you're picking out a facility for your parents. If they're going to be living in, whether it's independent living, assisted living, nursing, you need to get a feeling about that place, because we're expecting that it's going to be clean and that the food is going to be good. However, I would definitely have a meal or two there. But the feeling you get about the caregiver, that's the most important. What are the nurses' aides like? They are the ones that do all the work in nursing home. The nurses' aides are absolutely key. So you want to get a feeling about, are they friendly? Are they warm? Do they seem responsive? You need to know that. And you need to be sure that in a nursing home that they have a good activities program. Because if they don't, you don't want to be.
Right. Most definitely. I want to switch the topic a little bit to humor. I was talking to some people about my interactions with you and how I get your Christmas letter every year. I love that Christmas letter. I am the person who reads through it and laughs and understands the difficulties and challenges around the holidays in general, but then you make them funny. So tell me how caregivers can even incorporate or think about humor in caregiving.
I hadn't had a sense of humor in 14 years as caregiver for my mother and father. I would have gone bonkers. I can still remember that very first couple of months after they both got into independent living. After my father had a recovery, took him about 5 months, but he had a complete recovery from his stroke. Then they got into independent living, where mother really didn't belong because she didn't fit there. But my father convinced them that he could take care of her. He was a salesman, and he must have done a good job. So I finally moved to Texas after about 7 months because I found out I couldn't do what I needed to from 1,000 miles. But I got to tell you, I remember one time after going to visit them, and I went to the steps that were on the side, and I was at the bottom of the steps, and I yelled out loud, "I cannot this." But you know something? I could do it. And the way that I did it was to make friends with the staff and remember that the things I loved most about my parents were still there. Even though my mother's memory was fragile, her humor and her wit were still there. And I loved interacting with them. And my father was just funny. He was very demanding, and he was himself fully, even when the stroke. So once I was able to find the humor in our interactions, it really helped. And I often tell people that so often caregivers want their parents to be the way they used to be, especially those with dementia or Alzheimer's. They want that old parent there, and they get angry when the parent with dementia is being who they are at the time. And I always say, you've got two choices. You can either correct them and be right, or you can love them and be kind. And kind is so much more important than right. Right is not important at all. You wouldn't tell you. See, we want them to be sharp. We want them not to repeat themselves and ask the same question. They're going to do that because that's where they are. You know, that very first couple of weeks when I moved to Texas, I was trying to deal with mother's Alzheimer's. And one day she asked me if she could go visit her sister at Smithville, about 60 miles away. Now, that would have been a perfectly logical request if one thing hadn't been a problem. She'd been dead for 8 years. And I, being a rookie caregiver, made the mistake of telling my mother that. I said, "Mom, we can't go see Estelle. She's in heaven." Well, my mother started crying. It was brand new news to her. She began crying, sobbing, shaking. She cried for 15 minutes. And I am just sitting there going, "Did I do?" And then the next day, I got me an appointment with an Alzheimer's specialist. And she knew my situation. I walked into her office. And I said, "I don't think I can do this." And she said, "Honey, I hear you don't have much choice." And of course, she was right. I did have none. There wasn't any other choice. There was no one else to do it but me. And then she gave me the best piece of advice I ever got about caregiving. He said, "Quit trying to drag your parents into your world. They can't go there anymore. Instead, you must go into their world. Go into their world." Well, for some reason, I got it. When she said those words, Suddenly it was clear to me that's what I needed to do. And I went into my, especially my mother, I went into her world from that day on. And as it changed year by year, and the dementia got worse and worse and worse, I changed with it. I matched where she was, not where I wanted her to be. And by doing that, our relationship worked. Even in the last couple of years, when she couldn't talk at all. Even about 8 years in, when she didn't know who I was. I remember that day clearly because I knew it was going to come. I knew that day would come. And when it did come, I smiled, gave her a hug, and introduced myself. Jim Comer, your firstborn. Hi. And she looked up at this stranger and giving her a smile and a hug, and she warmed up to me.
Because my mother was a friendly, social person.
So it didn't matter whether she knew my name or knew who I was a kind person that loved. And that's all we could do right then. And as I say, later on, she began to lose her speech, and finally she had
no speech.
And I had to relate to her the way she could relate, which is taking a walk in the garden, taking drives in the car, buying her ice cream, which she loved ice cream. I could do those things. And that's what I did. I didn't expect her to be what I wanted, but who she was.
I think you mentioned something that's very important, which is the loss of knowing someone's name. I find that many caregivers struggle when their person with dementia don't remember their name anymore. And I use the same strategy that you do, which is when my mom didn't know my name, I would walk in and I'd do my little jazz hands and I'd go, look it, Valerie is here. And I found that that was a much more compassionate way of talking with my mom versus saying, don't you remember who I am? Do you remember? Who am I?
The right thing. You are announcing yourself and not making them wrong. It is never a good idea to make them wrong. This is a funny one that happened. Sorry, wait, humor. My mother, especially those first 4 or 5 years, she remembered that I was infamous for running out of gas. I don't know. I went through a long stage where I ran out of gas. And my mother knew it. It was in her mind, and it stuck in her memory. So when I would come to see her, especially those years at independent living, she'd say, Jeff, how are you fixed for gas? Now, don't you lie to your mama. Tell me, how do you have gas in that gas tank? I would say, well, of course I do. I just, full tank, mama, full tank. Well, once that subject had got into her mind, he might ask me the same question 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times in one visit. And the answer was simple. I needed to answer the question 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. I didn't need to say, mama, you just asked me that. That's not what you want to do. You just want to smile and answer the question again. That way, she's happy that I've got gas and I'm not putting her down. Now, that I'm not saying that's easy. Get me wrong. I'm not saying it didn't sometimes make me a little crazy. It did. But I nevertheless remembered what was important, which was loving my mother and answering the question and not putting her down.
One of the things I think that is funny my mom does now is she talks about her daughter, Valerie, to Valerie.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, I was a wild child.
Well,
yeah,
they remember a lot about us, even when we think they don't.
They certainly do.
One of the things that happened, let me tell you one more thing.
One of the things that sense of humor, one of the things when both of my parents had broken hip, and they did it within 7 months of each other, that was 5 years ill, they skipped over assisted living into skilled nursing. And my father still had his mind, but he just couldn't, with a broken hip, he just couldn't do for himself. So he was there in the nursing home, and the lobby kind of had these big wooden kind of, was set up with a lot of wood. And my father thought that the receptionist was a bank teller. And he would wheel himself up and ask to withdraw funds. And of course, there was A, she had no funds, and B, there was nothing in the nursing home to spend money on, not a vending machine, nothing. But she kept saying, Jim, your father keeps asking me for money. And I came up with an idea. I said, look, I'm going to give you 20 single, $21 bills. You keep them in a, you know, in a little envelope with my dad's name on it. When he comes up, you give him $2 or $3, and it'll make him feel good. And she did that. For years, she did. And he'd get $2 or $3. It would make him feel better. 2 weeks later, he'd come back and want more. We never knew where the money went. Never had any idea. But she did that as a favor to me and to him. And it made everybody happy. And it worked. That's called improvisation. And improvisation is very important for caregivers. You will not always know a simple way to solve the problem. So sometimes you are going to need to improvise.
Out of the box.
The box thinking. And it worked. This machine. In fact, when my father passed away, I gave her a portrait of him that had been done, and she just loved it. She was a great supporter of my father.
One of the questions I have is for those families who have had those rocky relationships. Maybe they haven't been that close, and they see dementia as more of a manipulation rather than biology.
The parent manipulating, they think their parent is manipulating them. Oh, wow.
Have you not run across that, Jim?
I haven't, but I know it's much harder for adult caregivers who have not been close and loving with their parents to show up and do this hard work caregiving. I absolutely know that, and I respect those who show up and do it anyway. Now, I don't know about, I think maybe it might be more difficult for them to give their parents the benefit of the doubt, to choose that kindness rather than that being right. But sometimes I've heard people say that in the last years of their parents' life, when they were being caregivers, they developed a closeness that they never had before. That does happen sometimes. Not always. Not guaranteed.
Yes.
But it can happen. And that's a wonderful thing when it does happen, because suddenly their parents are not the ones that have the power. They do. If they are kind and loving with that power and really begin to connect with their parents, things can really change in those last years.
And what about the importance of self-care?
Oh, well, we all know that the statistics say that caregivers often wreck their health and sometimes even die before the ones they're caring for. And that happens because they haven't built in some boundaries. You definitely need to have, you need to ask, first of all, you need to ask your other siblings if you have them. I didn't have any. My brother had died years earlier in a car accident, so I didn't have the siblings to ask. But if you've got siblings, and they're not helping, you definitely need to ask for their help. And I mean, it shouldn't be. It's too often one person, one brother or sister, is the one that does all the care. But it doesn't have to be that way. The caregiver needs to reach out. And I am not at all against the idea of doing a little guilting there. They need to do something to help you help your parents. Maybe the most they can do is send money. Well, that's something. Maybe they can come in for 1 or 2 weeks a year and give the active caregiver a break. That was something. Or maybe they can come at least a day or two a week, so you have, you know, that if you're the main caregiver, you have that time off. Or maybe there are places where you can go at adult daycare. They might be able to help pay for the parents being in adult daycare. So again, the main caregiver gets a break. But don't just sit back and think you have to be a martyr, because martyrs Those are not what we need in caregiving, because martyrs tend to die. In the word martyr, we think of the saint who is, you know, impaled or something. We don't want you to die. We don't want you to break your health. We want you to set real boundaries about what you can do and can't do, and how you can get help from the other members of your family or from the community or any kind of help that's available in the community for caregivers.
And that takes strong communication.
It does. It does. You should not, too often, and I've seen this happen, caregivers feel as if they can't ask for help. And that's not right. They can ask for help and they need help. And if their health is going down, they need to let everybody know that I can't continue doing this. I need someone to step in with me. And sometimes that means putting the parent in a nursing home or assisted living, if you can afford it. Sometimes you have to be willing to say, I no longer can do it. That's the right answer in many cases.
Well, Jim, I'm thinking our time is getting up and it makes me sad.
We've covered a lot in a little bit of time here. I'm going to I want to leave you with this. Caregivers don't get much recognition because nobody's seeing those private, simple little things you do to help your parents. The world is not going to give you any award. There's going to be no Oscar or Tony or Emmy for that. However, there's two things I want you to know. You are going to know that you did the right thing. You showed up when your parents needed you. And that is a good feeling. It's a very good feeling to know that you came through when you were needed. And I still remember this was when my father was in the nursing home. One Sunday afternoon, I'd come to see him, and I was heading, I'd said goodbye, given him a hug, and I was heading down the hall, and one of the guys that he was sitting with said, "Who was that man?" And my father said, "That is my son." And he said it with such a feeling of warmth and caring that I heard down the hall, and I realized how much he appreciated what I was doing. Now, he never said that, but when he said, "That's my son," I heard it in his answer, and that was worth an Oscar for me.
I bet it was. I appreciate you showing up today for me, Jim.
Oh, it's so good to see you again. I loved being there back in 2017. We had such a good time. It was a great audience, and tell them to hang me back. I'm available.
So I hope that our paths can cross again. And I wish you the very best. Keep sending the Christmas letters.
Worry, you'll get one.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
Let's rewind. I want to thank Jim Comer for the incredible insight and inspiration he shared with us today. And I want to thank those of you listening for taking the time to learn how to provide better care and better self-care in your incredibly challenging work. If you walk away with one piece of advice from today's podcast, remember, it's okay to laugh and find humor in your caregiving journey. And as always, never forget, you're only human and you're doing a great job.